Welcome back. I'm Ismail Akhrin. It's a slow Sunday, but we've had a political hurricane of a week. President Ramaphosa gave the country some hope that the worst lockdown will end by the end of May. Tobacco and alcohol consumers are still desperate for a drink or a smoke. And cabinet ministers seem to be sending out messages that are different, at least in tone, to that of the president. It has provided great fodder to very many of the ideologues to the right of the ruling alliance. Those to the left seem completely devoid of ideas, it should be said. The DA have their tail up, with John Steenhuisen and Gareth Cliff joining the likes of the South African Institute of Race Relations and a clutch of journalists and public intellectuals who are challenging the government's lockdown. It's their right, and we shouldn't deny them their right. While some of the criticism draws on science, you know, much like the way that global warming deniers also use science, others have been unabashedly ideological. These are the ones who have tapped into the Trump-like lift the lockdown and open the economy types. But there's one submission that has been made and published in the conversation that carries a significant amount of intellectual weight and makes a lot of sense. I've already made my voice known over the past few weeks that the presentation of either or and this binary is a false binary. We either save the economy or we save people is a false binary because we can save both. But the piece published by the conversation is really quite significant. And we have now on the line now Professor Alex van der Heerfer, one of the writers. And I'd like to have him actually give us a lot more of the substance and explain some of the thinking behind their article. Good evening, Professor van der Heerfer.
Good evening.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
I'm very well indeed. I really, most people enjoyed the piece that you had written and with Imran and others. Can you tell our listeners who may not have read it, what your main conclusions are and how you reach some of those conclusions?
Yeah, so within the South African context, the sort of generalized lockdown on an extended basis is problematic. But the initial phase of the lockdown was essentially there, or should have been, to buy us time to implement the sort of replacement public health interventions that can suppress the epidemic while also allowing us to safely open important parts of the economy. So as you were indicating earlier, the key strategic risk that South Africa faces is looking at the sort of a balance of risks, the risk of the virus versus the risk of a closed economy. And it has to kind of try and suppress the epidemic going forward while keeping the economy open. So it's not about necessarily trading off the virus, the epidemic taking off. It's about whether or not our strategy going forward is able to manage that particular risk. We are not really in a position to go for a sort of an indefinite lockdown period, lockdown process in South Africa.
Well, absolutely not. One of the things, and it might not sound ideologically correct, but we can't control the virus, but we can control the economy, in a manner of speaking. Is that right? So if we can go back to work, but we don't know what's going to happen next with the virus.
Well, so there are a number of public health strategies that do help suppress the epidemic. So if you look at what's happening, for instance, in the UK, is that they've introduced their generalized lockdown in order to bring the infection rates down to a level at which they can be managed with an alternative strategy. And their alternative strategy is essentially smart testing and tracing. You're targeting clusters, and so you're maintaining the epidemic at a sort of a relatively low level. But for that type of strategy to work, you have to have new infections or incidence of the disease at a relatively low level. South Africa has had its infection levels at relatively low levels. It hasn't had the epidemic of London or New York or Spain or Italy. And therefore, it's in a position to have those measures take over. The only concern in the South African context is the testing and tracing strategy hasn't really been implemented at the scale it should have. Right. And that's really a key risk factor for us at the moment, because that really was our way out.
So I'm you know, I'm sorry, I'm new at radio. I do this occasionally, but in my own mind, I think that the initial lockdown was necessary to buy the state some time. Have we had enough time to prepare the infrastructure? Because I keep thinking, and I've got this metaphor that I've used before, that I keep thinking we are in that moment before a shattering. I mean, you always expect that our informal sectors, that, you know, these informal sectors across the country are going to get hit at some point. Have we had enough time to build up infrastructure to deal with this?
The straight answer to that is that we've had the time, but we haven't necessarily built up to the scale we should have. It's unclear in terms of feedback from the National Health Laboratory Services whether or not the testing capacity has actually been increased to the level at which it can be used strategically to suppress the epidemic. There's a difference between testing when people are symptomatic and arrive at hospital and you want to differentiate, find out who the positives are and the negatives are for safety purposes. That's not a strategic use of testing. That's just a general precaution. The testing that's really necessary to suppress the epidemic is where you're trying to identify where there are clusters, you do deep contact tracing, and you try and immediately separate all the people who might have been in contact with the person you've detected. So if you're getting to, say, 90% of their contacts, you're starting to reduce the reproduction rate of the epidemic, and you're doing it allowing activity to generally continue. South Africa is not in a position to stop the social distancing and to stop a lot of the precautions which need to stay in place. And they're going to be with us for a very long time. And they actually do have an effect on suppressing the epidemic, but we need something else to tip the scales. So the lockdown is actually a very clumsy mechanism in the South African context. So the risk you point out in the highly concentrated, densely populated townships and informal settlements represent a major risk area that you have to kind of target very carefully, not necessarily with lockdowns, but with careful targeted measures, because they are the high-risk areas which will take over at some point. But we will not necessarily have a raging epidemic if we are managing it smartly. It really depends on speed and maintaining this for quite a while until we have a vaccine.
Could you talk to us a bit more about maintaining? How do you maintain it? Is it monitoring, testing, or testing and monitoring? Because social distancing or personal physical distancing is so utterly impossible. I drive from Gordon's Bay into the city a couple times a week, and there are just people playing football along the side of the road, and everywhere you go, there people are mingling, and it's as if nothing's happening. So it's difficult to enforce that. So when you say, so how do we manage this?
Not everybody is going to be managing that particular aspect, and it's not always going to be possible to regulate it. But to the extent that people that are working in businesses, that are in shopping centres, which are key bridges between communities for infection, they are very important. Hospitals and transport, bulk transport. That's where you're in contact with somebody for longer than, say, 15 minutes in a closed space, even with a mask. You risk being infected or infecting somebody. So you have to find ways of protecting those that already suppresses the epidemic to a degree, but it will still continue. When you get into those sort of areas where a community-based outbreak has begun in an area, the best way really is to find everybody as quickly as possible.
Right.
And that means there's sort of generalized screening, which is a way of prioritizing who you test. And then there's sort of testing in which you identify, that particular area might actually be quite risky, because we, on sample testing, found one person from there. You contact trace into that area, and then you test, concentrate your testing around that area, and then deepen your focus until you've resolved the hotspot. So that really is going to be our only strategy going forward. Yeah. There is no other, even for London, there's no other strategy. They can't maintain a lockdown. They can't go into another 3-month lockdown in the UK.
It's impossible. Professor, can you just hold on for a second? I just want to remind us, our listeners, that we have on the line Professor Alex van der Heerther discussing a very important contribution to the discussion on whether we should continue the lockdown, whether we should phase it down, whether we should phase it up, and discussing, although these are my words, the false binary between either or. So if you want to get involved in the conversation, send us a WhatsApp at 072-567-1567. Call us at 021-446-0567 or tweet us at Cape Talk. Professor van der Heerther, one of the strengths of the paper, in my view, is that you deal with I feel I have to say this because it's my view, but it's also an important view. These aren't non-overlapping magisteria. I have difficulty separating politics from economics and all the others. But the strength of your paper is that you discuss the economic issues, you discuss the social impact as well as the economic costs. You bring together the children. It is a very comprehensive approach. And so that probably is a result of the collaborative approach that you took on this. Could you discuss that for us, please?
Yeah, so the strength of the group is that we bring together, people from humanities, philosophy, economists. My background is in social security and financing, people who are working in labor economics and general economics, and people who've been in the public finance, in the National Treasury, with the medical people, including people who are sitting on the Ministerial Advisory Committee. So across the board, we've got a pretty diverse perspective, and it allows us to bring together a balance, to create that balance, to look at basically the balance of risks. Because
right.
There's no one risk. There's the risk associated with COVID on its own.
Right.
And then there's the risk associated with your response to COVID. And you have to keep them in balance. In the South African context, so many people are so close to the bone that you withdraw some aspects of the economy when we really don't have very effective social protection mechanisms in place. We just drop a whole bunch of people into near starvation. So we've got to be very careful about that. Then there are the issues that there are a whole lot of people who are receiving treatment for healthcare. Those are vulnerable, TB patients, HIV patients. And those people are also now not coming forward for treatment. Mm-hmm. And we've got to, and then there are all the people for elective surgeries, cancers, and so on, who are not coming forward. So that's a whole series of health risks that are currently creating a delayed impact, just like another epidemic, but something completely different. So we've got to balance that with how we intervene. So we have to sort of cut a very fine line, and it's not about trading off lives for the economy. It's about basically taking the route forward that protects the most people, and that really is how we kind of look at it. And it means that constantly, in a sort of genuine risk-adjusted strategy, you'd be constantly looking at this balance. You'd never be looking at only one factor.
I think the one point you made there stood out for me is placing on hold, as it were, treatment for other illnesses, ailments, and diseases like TB and cancers. It's as if you've put the entire medical system on hold to deal with COVID-19, and that's a danger.
It's a very unusual moment that we have, because in both the public and the private sectors, the health systems have effectively come to a sort of a partial halt.
Right.
And that is a scary thing because they typically see millions of patients every day and you've got empty beds. Right. We've got 600 COVID patients in our health system and nobody else. I mean, that's a bit extreme, but it's a kind of a picture along those lines. Right. Empty beds everywhere.
Empty beds, yes. Now, what I wanted to ask you, and this is an unfair question, I accept it. What would be the first thing you would do if you were to tell to advise the president now? What would be, just for the sake of discussion, let's assume you're speaking on behalf of the group. But knowing Professor Volodya is not here, and you, what would be the first step that you would recommend?
Well, from the economic approach, we would invert the current approach that's in place, which is that you work from assessing your risks around the workplace. So you don't operate with shutting down the economy as your default strategy. Right. You basically work with your system open as your default and close what is necessary.
Right.
That's kind of the second thing is that because the general lockdown doesn't really suppress the epidemic, except in areas which are probably not going to be affected severely going forward, you basically have to pull back on the generalized lockdown but focus on the areas with health prevention strategies that can work. And so I think that's kind of the broad view is that the triggers for moving down levels were too crude in our view because they assumed that you would be working with reduced levels of new infection. And in fact, what we're seeing is under the lockdown that began under level 5, we have had increases. We've had a reproduction rate of the disease that is above 1, which means that it's growing.
It's growing, yeah.
And if you have exactly the same theoretical lockdown in London, has a reproduction rate below 1, and so it's in decline. Right. So that means that our health prevention strategy doesn't work. It's a clumsy measure in the South African context. So we have to have a targeted measure. So we have to shift over to the targeted measures, and we have to look at the strategic opening up. And when you open up, we actually propose that we move to level 2 from an economic perspective.
That's what I wanted to, because I remember somewhere in your paper you mentioned level 2. Now, would that level apply to across the country and across metropolitan all metros?
Yes. So essentially what would happen is that if an area suddenly has a sort of a bigger outbreak, you would focus on it. That doesn't mean that you lock it down. It can mean that you focus first with testing, tracing, and quarantining. Only if the outbreak becomes more generalized, and then you lose control from a sort of testing, tracing, and separation perspective, you can temporarily lock down an area just to get a hold on it. And that's not like 2 months or 3 months. That's potentially like 3 days, 4 days, just to get a hold on it. So you're really chasing hotspots. That would be the kind of strategy that we would have to have going forward. And we would it means that you also don't necessarily shut down businesses unless you detect outbreaks at the businesses, and then you shut down, clean up, and then allow them to reopen when subject to conditions.
But the shutdown, I'm trying to wrap my head. If let's say all of us at here at Cape Talk, there's an outbreak. Do we shut down and everybody stays away while it's being cleaned up, or some people come back? Because in the incubation period varies from person to person.
It will, and obviously people will be asymptomatic, so there is an issue of. Of sort of quarantining. Right. So it does depend on just how significant the potential outbreak was and whether or not somebody can keep going on, with people who were not connected or didn't have any kind of contact with that individual. Mm. But different organizations are going to be impacted differently. So in the Western Cape, a lot of the problems occur from shopping centres.
Right.
So that then tracks back into communities. So there it's quite serious,
right.
Because in fact a shopping area connects multiple communities. They can connect several districts. together several different wards.
Indeed.
And so you want to make sure that if something's happening there, you want to really control it fast and then get into the communities quickly where it went. If it happens in, those are very high priority areas. In others, you just want to make sure that the workplace is sorted out and safe for people to come back to. But what you don't want is just a generalized arbitrary lockdown where you're just shutting everybody down. Right. And that you only do when you have like totally lost control of everything.
Professor, before I let you go, and I just let me just thank you very much for making time, because I know it's Sunday night and you know it's a Sunday night and speaks for itself, and we're all tired of being locked up and locked down. But before I go, somewhere towards the end of your paper, you write something about the taxi industry and the difficulties of that. Now, most of us know the overcrowding of taxis. How do we address that issue? Because, you know, you implicitly made the point that a shopping center is not just a shopping center. When people leave there, they go back into their communities. You know, so it's, you can isolate and clean up the shopping center, but the people go back home.
So in the case of shopping centers, they're bridges between communities.
Yeah, yeah.
Theoretically, taxis are the same, except that there's a smaller group relative to a shopping center. So that you have to protect those because of the frequency and the requirement for transport. So it's quite a difficult issue, and I would actually recommend that it's actually studied, that you trial what you do. But one of the things is that because it's airborne, you want to minimize the extent to which people are in an enclosed space. So for instance, at the moment, the regulations haven't even considered like driving with open windows, that people sit by the windows, they all have masks, but nobody's in the center seat. So those are conditions that are fairly easy to regulate, and means that people have air that is flowing in and out. So you're not sitting in the same space for more than 15 minutes, which is the kind of time period in which the likelihood for infection really increases. So it just that on its own statistically reduces the risk quite a lot.
Professor, I want to thank you for making the time, and also for the comprehensive piece that you published. And you know, we just hope that we can make it through this, and you know, come out on the other side. And because we went into this, and I'll wear my other cap now, and we went into this with our economy limping. And it's crawling at the moment, and we'd like to at least take a step up at the end of this this virus.
Thanks for the comments on the paper, and I think South Africa is. I think there's a lot of things that we've learned during this period, both about how our democracy works, governance of these kinds of issues, as well as the huge problems with our economy and our social security system.
That's good. Thank you very much, Professor. That was Professor Alex van der Heever of the Wits School of Governance, discussing a really comprehensive paper that they published on the lockdown and a new COVID-19 strategy.